Hi, welcome to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star, filling in for Bill Buckmaster, who is on vacation and having a wonderful time, we hope. I wanted to let you know that podcasts of the show are available online at buckmastershow.com, tucsoncitizen.com, and tucsonsentinel.com. So there is really no excuse for not listening to the Buckmaster Show, whenever and however you want. We're joined here to speak with Dr. Nick Clement, who is the superintendent of the Flowing Wells Unified School District. He is retiring after, is that the right word?
Yes.
Okay. After 9 years as superintendent. And he's here to speak with us about his time in Flowing Wells, the future of education in Arizona. And thank you for being here.
Oh, great to be here.
So tonight is a special night for Flowing Wells High School.
It is.
It's a graduation. How many in the class of 2013?
We've got about 314 that are going to walk through ceremony tonight.
That is, what's it like just from a logistical standpoint, getting that many people organized?
Well, it's huge. It's our Academy Awards. It's the Oscars. It's everything wrapped into one. We will have more of our parents on that campus, more community members on that campus for those 3 hours than we will have the rest of the year. So it's so critical that every detail is taken care of, down to parking and sound. And we want this. We want parents to walk away feeling so good about those 13 years that their kids spent at our school.
And I know that in Flowing Wells, it's very much a family atmosphere. People who grow up in the district, live in the district, work in the district, have strong roots. And that part of the district's philosophy is helping kids look ahead. Picture yourself in high school. Picture yourself in college. So do you get younger kids coming to the graduation as kind of a, this is where you will be?
We do. We encourage that. All of our principals come.
That's great.
Many of the elementary faculty come. They're all invited. We have them sit up front. We want the kids to know that their teachers supported them all the way through graduation. And it is important that it's the next step. There's a next step. And we call it the 100% initiative. That is that we want 100% of our kids, after they graduate, to enroll in a post-secondary experience, and we actually follow that up. We call them or use their Facebook at the end of next year to find out where they're at, what they're doing, what we could have done better to prepare them for that life after high school.
Wow. That takes a huge commitment.
It does. It takes time, takes resources, but that's the data that goes along with, you know, AIM scores are important, but that's a slice in time. That if you're talking about career and college ready, how do you know if they were college and career ready if you don't check with them a year or two years? Now we're also doing a 2-year follow-up study to see where they're at.
And what have you found? Any initial results? What are you hearing?
We've found that there is a, you know, if you have 95% say they're going on to college, we know that at the end of the first year that percentage goes down. We know that writing is an issue. It's something we've got to continue to look at in our preparation for students in that life after high school in the area of writing. So we're getting some good data. We want to possibly get some focus groups of graduates to sit down with teachers. That's where you really can drill down and get information that helps change and evolve the curriculum.
And what sort of things do you look for in terms of, is it the plans that a student has, like I'm going to go to XYZ University and study this, or do you find that people change what they, you know, what they thought they were going into leaving high school isn't exactly what they ended up doing coming, you know, through college? Or what do you find that the students find themselves prepared?
I think overall we get that feedback that they are prepared. There's always ways we can do things different, but we really work, particularly that senior year, getting them ready to go. For example, Pima College, with their Compass test, we actually put kids on a bus. We field trip them to Pima. We get their – they give us their results. We then meet with our teachers to say, okay, here's where they placed at Pima. Here's and here's the strengths, and here's some – and those don't always line up with some of the other tests the kids are taking. And that's one of the challenges I think we have is we're – I wouldn't say over-testing, but we're inundating our kids with tests, and they're not always all lined up. ACT, SAT, AIMS, and now with the new Common Core, it would – we're hoping that those – and then Compass. We're hoping we get some alignment so kids aren't so stressed out about all the tests they have to take and that there's some correlation between them.
When should students and families start thinking about college or, you know, a different career educational – because not everyone right. is interested or suited to going to college. I mean, in my own family, my brother – is a police officer and didn't go to, you know, college as I did. And so how do you – when do you start that conversation? How do you get that going?
Well, we're hoping that this 100% initiative is now a district initiative. It started at the high school, but we actually have one of our six strategic plan goals that students will be prepared for college and career readiness. Which starts actually this week with Spirit Week at the preschool at Emily's Place, and one of the days was College Day. We want that as early as we can to start thinking about career and college and make it just part of our culture, not have it some separate thing out here that, oh, we're now going to do this to prepare kids for college readiness. It's just interwoven within our culture.
It's just sort of an expectation of that.
Yes.
Your 12th grade is not the end.
That's correct. It's the same thing with 8th grade or 6th grade that it is not the end.
One thing – I've been spending a lot of time at Walter Douglas Elementary School, and one thing that I've noticed is that the teachers are very aware of to the 4th grade, okay, future 5th graders. You know, they're very always sort of looking forward and preparing kids like this is what you're going to be doing. And I just find that very helpful, I think, because kids see that, oh, well, this is what I do and this is what I'll be doing. And it's – you're not just at a point in time. You're on a journey.
Right. It even goes into our fine arts. So we have district-wide concerts. So in the one of the reasons is so that a fifth grader who's playing the violin – gets to see what a senior who's in orchestra, what it looks like, what it sounds like. And it's kind of the – I call it see the future night so that those students can keep motivated and stay with their instrument. So we do it in band, orchestra, and it's just a great night because you get to go from the squeaky, you know, clarinet to – the sympathy, you know, and they're all – and then at the end, they all play a song together. It's as I say, the goosebump experience. So it's that idea of always trying to help kids see the future.
Turning to staying with education, but kind of that whole looking toward the future, I think sometimes people who don't have kids in school now – or maybe even those who do, or don't understand how school is different today than it was when they were in school or when their children were in school. I mean, I know we all had our experiences walking to school uphill in the snow both ways and barefoot and all of that. But can you talk a little bit about just from a practical standpoint, like there's really no more naps in kindergarten, which – I remember being a very exciting part of the day. So could you talk a bit about how the school day, the school experience is different than it was 10, 15, 30 years ago?
Yes. Schools have evolved, and we have to keep evolving if we're going to attract students because of the choice. And it is not the same kinder. It is not the same senior year that I had in 1972. Much more rigorous, much more focused. Teachers are better trained. There's more research about learning. the current brain research that talks about attention span, that talks about the amount of practice you need, the technology that we have in classrooms that provide the tools for teachers to make things visual, to get more of the senses involved. Those tools weren't available 30 years ago, which are now, but you've got to have the training. The technology doesn't make the teacher makes the technology. But, you know, what we encourage, the high school has bring your parents to school week.
That's great.
Okay. I wouldn't have even thought about, when I was a senior, I didn't want my parents anywhere near school. So what we do that because we want parents to see what a day is like now. Particularly, you know, there's a myth about the senior year being this blow-off year that they're not really engaged. And then they get to college and, because I didn't have that rigorous experience. It's not the case.
That is – I would like to pick up on that when we come back from our break. On our way to the break, I would like just to let you know that this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico, which is hosting the 18th annual Silver City Blues Festival Memorial Day weekend, May 24th, 25th, and 26th in beautiful Silver City, New Mexico. It's just 3.5 hours east of Tucson, and there are plenty of great places to stay, including the Continental Divide RV Park and the Bear Creek Cabins. We'll be back in a bit.
Hey, we're at this incredible event put on by who else but Arizona Party Rebel. Everybody who's anybody is here. Aren't you?
John Fina.
You're
Jim Levinsky.
I know that face.
Bruce Beach.
Hey there.
Billy Flower.
Great to see you.
Burt Williams.
I thought I just saw you.
Bob Schaff.
Thanks for coming.
Casey Polipchak.
You look familiar.
Dave Fitzsimmons.
Gosh, it's great to see
Chris
you.
Chris Edwards.
Hey, come on in.
Diana Cannon.
I didn't know you were coming.
Bill Hussey.
You're
Joseph Blair.
Hey, how you doing?
Bill Viner.
You know that face.
Mike Fader.
Aren't you?
Jeff Ronstadt.
Hey, this is Ken Flower. You can join the party too. Go to ArizonaPartyRental.net.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Weston La Paloma, Tucson's iconic luxury resort and spa, is now better than ever with a $30 million resort rejuvenation that includes all guest rooms, public spaces, meeting rooms, upgraded golf and tennis, and soon a new pool area and enhanced fine dining. And the setting, well, it couldn't be better on 250 acres in the foothills of the Catalinas. Take a look at the rejuvenation at WestonLaPalomaResort.com.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
If you love antiques like I do, I strongly suggest a visit to Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American Western art. They also have a fantastic selection of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell. Adobe House Antiques, 325-9439. That's 325-9439. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Hi, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. My name is Sarah Garrett Gasson. I'm an editorial writer over at the Arizona Daily Star, and I am filling in for Bill Buckmaster, although no one really can. And he is on vacation, having a wonderful time. We're here with Dr. Nick Clement, superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, who spent a long career in Flowing Wells. And we were just talking a little bit about what the differences are between, you know, when we think of education or school experience, how it's very different than what kids experience today. And you were talking about, like, the senior year, that it's
– right. We have many of our seniors that they take part of their classwork on the campus, and then they go to a JTED program, a Certified Nursing Assistant program, fire science, law enforcement, cosmetology. They are very busy. A very full day, and then the testing. I mean, if you look at the number of tests, and I'm all for assessment when it's used correctly, but when you again, when you have too much assessment, when do you do your teaching? And if you look at the senior year, you have the ACT, the SAT. If you're going in the military, you have the ASVAB, and then you might have an AIMS test to take, and then your finals. It's different. You know, it's very different as far as expectations and the rigor of that senior year.
I wanted to talk a bit about the legislature. Plays such a huge role in education in terms of just sheer funding, what schools will get, what priorities are, in terms of divvying out tax dollars from the general fund. Could you talk a little bit about what you wish lawmakers knew when they were making these decisions?
So, you know, schools have been given the charge to be data-based, to be data-driven, that teachers need to be data-driven, that they need to make decisions about what they teach and how long they teach based on the data. So I totally agree with that, totally support it. But we ought to move that up to the policy level too, to where before we make funding decisions, we need to have data. We need to have objective data that supports or doesn't support funding in certain areas. And for example, we know the research is so compelling that the key attribute to student achievement, if you're going to change student achievement, it has to be at the teacher, with the teacher. So it's about the teacher quality. And if you're looking at funding and how do we make sure that we have the highly skilled, highly qualified teacher in the classroom, we need to pay a competitive salary in order to do that. And that should be the number one priority when it comes to funding, is making sure that we have I would support a district, not only district, but a statewide salary schedule that is basically starts teachers at 40 grand. Now that, oh my gosh, but that's really where that starting point should be in order to attract that highly qualified teacher. Make them 12 months. Make it a full-time position so they're not out having to get a second job over the summer, and make it a true career. and profession.
You say you would start them at about $40,000. What do – like in Flowing Wells, what is the first year starting
salary? It's about $30,000. We're about $10,000 behind what we should be.
Do you think that people assume that teachers are in it for, you know, the intangible rewards, the joy and the satisfaction of seeing kids learn and all these things that make teaching like so many other professions, like people in, you know, child safety, things like that, that it makes it a calling and that more than a profession?
Well, I think you can have both. Mm-hmm. And we've been too reliant on the other, on the it's a calling, and less reliant on paying a fair salary.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to have both, because that idea of the calling doesn't pay your rent, doesn't provide you transportation, and you really need both. I'm not saying that it should be. I mean, when I went into teaching, I knew what I was getting into to some degree. So I'm not saying it should be at the same level as maybe some other professions, but it does need to have a fair salary to motivate and attract those high quality teachers.
Do parents have a larger role in the success of their child today as opposed to previously? And if you could talk, like, if you're a parent, we're coming up on summer break, mm-hmm. high school graduates tonight, what can a parent do, or a grandparent or a friend or a neighbor, over the course of the summer break to really help the student in their life?
Well, in Flowing Wells, we have a lot of summer programs. We have 2,000 kids involved in some type of academically focused summer program. So if I was a parent, I would seek out those opportunities to provide that continual practice that the kids need over the summer. Get them involved, even if it's a half a day. It can be swim lessons. It can be – it doesn't have to be that, you know, a reading tutor, but just keeping them actively engaged, mentally engaged. So parents – you know, I truly believe it's on the school to provide those opportunities. You know, the parent is key, but when we have a parent meeting, if we have a parent night, it needs to have a focus. It needs to – it's got to be a payoff for the parent to go, either materials or some tips on how to help with homework, but something that's focused. We've seen our parent engagement go way up. And I think it's because we really had a focus, math night, science nights, getting kids ready for science fair. So you have a parent science night, mm-hmm. not to say that parents should do the science fair project.
No.
But have them, you know, how to get the materials, how to help your student come up with the question. So I really – it's on the school, I believe, to provide the opportunities for parents – to help their kids.
We have a question from the Buckmaster Live line that I will paraphrase, I think, because we're coming up onto our break. And it's the question from Dan, and that is, how do teachers' salaries compare in our economy? I mean, is it a $30,000 for Tucson may not be a low wage?
Right. Well, it's by region. I'm not an expert in teacher salaries, but they're much higher back east. A little lower, but in the Midwest, say, for instance, the suburbs of Chicago, they're pretty significant. Compare us to New Mexico. New Mexico does have a statewide salary schedule, and they start, the last I knew, about $35,000 to $36,000. So we're about $5,000 behind what New Mexico is offering.
Okay, and I think that's a good range. Mm-hmm. It does differ across the country. I wanted to ask real quick what your plans are as you head out from your superintendency at Flowing Wells, really briefly.
Right. I'll be working full-time for NAU, Northern Arizona University, and I'll be doing the McFarland Citizens Chair in Education, advocating for education and change in education throughout the state.
I think that is great. I know you've you and I have known each other for a long time as I've covered education, and you were principal, I think, at the high school, and I just want to say wish you all the best in your new position, and you've really given a lot to Flowing Wells.
Thank you.
So I wanted to let you know that we'll be back in the next segment of the Buckmaster Show here at 10:30 a.m. KVOI The Voice. You can also listen to podcasts at buckmastershow.com, tucsoncitizen.com, and tucsonsentinel.com, and we're on the links to the show on the Green Valley News and the blog for Arizona. We will be back in just a few minutes.
With SRN News, I'm Wally Hines in Washington. An Oklahoma emergency management official says authorities still are working to find six adults who haven't been accounted for since the tornado tore through Oklahoma City earlier this week. 24 people known dead, including 10 children. President Obama will travel to Oklahoma this weekend to get a firsthand look at the damage and to meet with survivors and first responders. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie says this isn't the time for political payback. He's urging lawmakers in Washington to support swift and immediate aid to tornado victims in Oklahoma, even though both of Oklahoma's two Republican senators voted against bills sending $60 billion to victims of Superstorm Sandy, mostly in New Jersey. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke says it's too early to end stimulus programs, although some policymakers are hinting the Fed could start scaling back purchases this summer. More details at srnnews.com.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Everyone is switching to high-efficiency appliances because they have money, and a Culligan high-efficiency water softener does the same. But did you know that you can rent rather than buy? Think about it. No equipment to pay for upfront, money-saving purchase options if you change your mind, and service calls are included in the rental rate. In fact, you'll never have to pay for another water softener, ever. So now you can get all the benefits of soft water for less when you rent from Culligan. Imagine a spot-free home, softer skin, and brighter laundry for dollars a day. Even better, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy, plus helps all your appliances last longer. Let your Culligan man take care of your water when you rent the world's most efficient water softener. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cañada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's vscot.com.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Organization, Tucson Wildlife Center, is in the midst of a capital campaign to build Arizona's first state-of-the-art hospital for wildlife. The facility will help staff and volunteers care for nearly 1,000 raptors and mammals it receives each year at its Far East Side facility. To donate online, go to TucsonWildlife.com. For more information about wildlife rescue, visit the website or call 290-WILD.
Looking for a cool getaway this July? I highly recommend historic Bear Mountain Lodge, just minutes from the picturesque heart of Silver City, New Mexico, only 3.5 hours east of Tucson. Bear Mountain Lodge sits on 178 secluded acres nestled against the immense grandeur of the Gila National Forest. Check out this lovely high country tranquil oasis at bearmountainlodge.com.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cunada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Hi, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I am Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial writer and columnist at the Arizona Daily Star, filling in for Bill, who is on vacation. I wanted to let you know that this section of the Buckmaster Show is brought to you by Culligan Water. The bottled water on the Buckmaster Show is provided by Culligan, offering the best drinking water and the largest variety of water treatment products and services available to your home or business. And we are here today with in the studio with Nancy Bowman, and we will be joined on the live line by Patricia Mache, two women who were there at the Safeway that morning in January 8th, 2011, when shooting broke out and six people were killed and 13 were physically injured. Many more, I'm sure, with injuries and wounds that may not have shown up physically, but are still with us. So, Nancy, thank you for coming and being part of this. Could you just tell us briefly what that morning was, why you were there, what you were able to do?
Well, it was just as you can imagine. It was just a massacre. And as fate would have it, my husband and I were walking into the Safeway as the gunman was walking out. And in 17 seconds, he unloaded 33 bullets into a crowd. And within a matter of seconds, there were six people dead and 13 seriously wounded. And so we came out and tried to help as much as we can.
Because you have a medical background.
I'm a nurse and my husband's a doctor. So he just took on the triage mode right away and started triaging. And I, you know, had the opposite mind frame than he did. I stopped at the very first person I saw and started administering CPR.
So by the time the first responders arrived, some of the triage had been done by you and your husband.
Yeah, it was really quite remarkable. Within just a few minutes, my husband was able to make sure that everyone had somebody attending to them, that all of the bullet holes were being, there was a finger in every hole, as he would say.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, there was not a lot of attention taken away from the people who were bleeding to tend to those who had perished immediately.
Mm. Could you tell us a little bit about how you have kind of transformed from, or what, it, maybe it isn't a transformation, mm-hmm. and I'm sort of assuming, but mm-hmm. but how that experience has affected, you know, the years and the months and the days mm-hmm. since, and what you do now?
Well, it is a total transformation, I can tell you that. You know, when you're that close to people that have been shot and killed and people that are on the sidewalk bleeding to death, it is a transformation. And the only thing that I can say is that the only way that I can reconcile the fact that I was not in the line of fire where a 9-year-old girl or a judge or Gabrielle Giffords was is that I can use my voice now to try to prevent any similar shooting from happening. And if anything that I can do or say can motivate the citizenry or motivate Congress to do something to save a life, then I need to lend my voice to that.
In your experience in your career as a nurse, have you come across is trauma of, you know, gunshot wounds, was that part of your medical experience?
Nothing that I did in my 30-year career prepared me for that massacre. You know, as a nurse in a hospital, we're used to having everything available right there. We have the monitors and the code card and the medications and the gloves and the, you know, everything is available to us. It was like a war zone there. Mm-hmm. We just had to do what we could with what was available. And like I said, sometimes that was just putting a finger in a bullet hole.
We have Patricia Maesch joining us on the line. Thank you, Pat, for joining us. And you are coming to us from Nevada?
Carson City, Nevada. And hi, Nancy. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. You were there on January 8th and are well known for being the person who got the weapon and the clip away from the shooter. Is that correct?
I may be known for that, but I only managed the magazine. Another gentleman was able to get the gun. It was beyond my reach.
I see. So you too have spoken before about how this experience has transformed your life and what you do now. Can you tell us a little bit about why you're in Carson City, Nevada?
Well, the Nevada state government is working on a background check bill so that the private sale loophole will be closed, which means that no internet sales, no advertised in classified paper, no gun shows that are private sellers. Everyone has to have a background check. You don't get that loophole advantage anymore.
Because now, under federal law, you need a background check if you're buying from a licensed gun dealer, but not if it's, you know, at a garage sale or just a private purchase sale.
That's correct.
And how did it go?
Well, they are voting this afternoon. Nevada has just a session every other year, so they are in session right now. I just left the assemblyman session where they are about to consider that vote, but I needed to leave to come and be with you.
Well, thank you, and you will be returning to see how it goes?
I will.
Excellent. Well, I hope you will let us know.
I will.
You've been very straightforward, I think would be a word to use to describe your thoughts on the opposition that has come to universal background checks and limits on bullet clips, things like that. Did you come to that? Is that something that has grown over the months that you've been active in this, or is that something like that was just sort of an instant reaction?
I would say I came to it fairly quickly. I wouldn't say it was an instant reaction because my reaction from that massacre was just to try to decompose and regain some sense of why this happened and how it could happen. And it was shortly thereafter that I was offered an opportunity by Mayors Against Illegal Guns to have my voice heard. And so I took that opportunity, and I have been on that bandwagon since.
And, excuse me, Nancy, how about you? Was that something that was instant or that you grew into?
I definitely grew into it. Prior to that incident, I was, I would call myself pretty much apolitical. I just assumed that when you elected officials, they went to Washington and they took care of things that needed to be taken care of to protect the citizenry. And now I have learned that, you know, I hate to say it, but I think members of Congress are bought and sold every day. And they need to hear from citizens like us, ordinary citizens like Pat and I, that we do not want them to make decisions based on how much they get, how many contributions they get to their political campaign, or how it's going to affect their political campaign. We want them to make decisions based on what's best for the people of the United States.
And do you think that, Pat, do you agree that with Nancy's kind of summation of the way Congress works or doesn't work today?
I do, and I'm a little more vocal about especially gun control than are a little more forceful than Nancy just was, and I believe that the NRA, the gun lobby, and the gun manufacturers have our legislators by the throat. They choose to try to be scary, big scary guys. I think that has waned recently with the Americans for Responsible Solutions, with mayors for illegal mayors against illegal guns, with the Brady campaign, with Moms Demand Action, Women Against Gun Violence. I think that there's a groundswell after, unfortunately, it took 20 children and 6 adults murdered brutally, bodies beyond recognition, at Newtown before most of us stood up and said enough. So I like to say that the NRA and their associates, including some of our legislators, have blood on their hands, and they need to be working, our legislators need to be working to earn an A-plus rating from us instead of pandering to the NRA for their A-plus and for their cash.
Well, Pat, I think no one is going to misunderstand your point of view. You're a very eloquent advocate for your position. We're going to take a short break here at the Buckmaster Show, and please stay with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Hey, we're at this incredible event put on by who else but Arizona Party Road. Everybody who's anybody is here, aren't you?
John Fina.
You're
Jim Levinsky.
I know that face.
Bruce Beach.
Hey there.
Billy Flower.
Great to see you.
Burt Williams.
I thought I just saw you.
Bob Schaff.
Thanks for coming.
Casey Polipchak.
You look familiar.
Dave Fitzsimmons.
Gosh, it's great to see
Chris
you.
Chris Edwards.
Hey, come on in.
Diana Cannon.
I didn't know you were coming.
Bill Hussey.
You're
Joseph Blair.
Hey, how you doing?
Bill Viner.
You know that face.
Mike Fader.
Aren't you?
Jeff Ronstadt.
Hey, this is Ken Flower. You can join the party too. Go to ArizonaPartyRental.net.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Finding the perfect Tucson rental home is now easy thanks to Tucson Rental Homes, which offer high-quality 1, 2, and 3-bedroom luxury rental homes with private gated yards in a classic Santa Fe-style architecture. Designed, built, and managed by Tucson Rental Homes, prices start at just $750 a month. Check out our many homes now available at TucsonRentalHomes.com.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
Come in, sit down. You must be Megan and Mark.
I'm Sharon, your wedding planner.
Hello.
Hi.
So, are you planning a large wedding?
150 guests.
Okay, then. Fairly large. Let me just get online and we can look at some venues.
Wow. Is that dial-up?
You bet. Oh, they keep trying to sell me fast internet, but come on, faster internet. I need that like I need a color monitor. Oh, now, I assume you'll be videotaping your ceremony? Oh, just ignore that. The machine will pick it up.
Your technology says a lot about your business. Cox Business Internet Professional offers speeds 10 times faster than basic DSL. Cox Business also gives you local support 24/7, free online backup and security. Bundle business internet starter and phone for only $95 per month. Switch to Cox Business today and make your business our business. Visit coxbusiness.com. Offer valid until July 1st, 2013. Prices exclude taxes and other fees and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Speed comparison based on maximum download speed of Cox Business Internet Professional 15 megabits per second versus basic DSL 1.5 megabits per second. Other restrictions apply.
Hi, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star, filling in for Bill, who is on vacation. We are here with Nancy Bowman in the studio and Patricia Mache on our Buckmaster Live line, and we're talking about gun legislation and what steps that they've taken since being witnesses and survivors of the January 8th, 2011 shootings. To turn their experience kind of into advocacy. Nancy, we were speaking during the break about, and it's something that I've thought a lot about, the idea of how we frame this issue. Because gun control isn't what we're talking about, although that's commonly how people describe it. How do you think of it?
Well, I think that's the problem that a lot of people have is they look at this as a gun control measure, and it's not gun control. It has nothing to do with registering a gun. It has nothing to do with confiscating a gun. It's gun violence epidemic. That's how I look at it from a nursing perspective. We have an epidemic in this country. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people are being killed every year with guns. And I can't think of any other situation where we would tolerate thousands of people being killed and do absolutely nothing about it. In the 2 years that we've been speaking out on getting a hold of the gun violence in this country, our Congress has done absolutely nothing. There hasn't been a single piece of legislation that has been passed to help stop this epidemic.
Pat, what are your thoughts on the idea of gun control? Is there a more appropriate term to frame this conversation? What are your thoughts?
I do think there's a better term, and it's gun violence prevention. I agree with Nancy. It's a health and safety issue. It's no longer just a couple of people that nobody knows being murdered in the inner city. There have been, since Virginia Tech, 187,000 deaths by gun. And that doesn't count, Sarah, the collateral damage. Wounds like Gabby Gifford's wounds that will be forever a challenge for her. For Ron Barber, who was shot in the leg, for Jim Tucker, whose shoulder was blown away. It's an epidemic. It's a health and safety issue, and there's no other country in the world that has the kind of gun violence that we have.
We have a call from Dan, and I wanted to just he's wondering about the mental health issue and saying that, you know, we haven't gotten to that in the discussion yet. And that is something that the NRA and many of people in the gun lobby say, well, it's not the guns that are the problem, it's the people who get the guns, and we need to do more with mental health. And Nancy, since your background is as a nurse, I would like to get your thoughts on the whole mental health aspect. And is that part and part separate? Do we have to pick one or the other, or can we do both?
Absolutely not. I'm a mom. I can do two things at once. And I think a legislator can deal with the mental illness aspect of gun violence, how we're going to identify our mentally ill and how we're going to keep them from getting their hands on a gun. That's going to be a very, very long and tedious process because mental illness spans such a huge spectrum from obsessive compulsive disease to paranoid schizophrenia. So that's going to be a difficult issue. It needs to be talked about and it needs to be addressed. But at the same time, we need to close the gun show loophole so that our mentally ill, our convicted criminals, our domestic abusers can't just walk into a gun show and buy a gun easier than it is to buy Sudafed for a head cold.
Pat, what are your thoughts?
I agree with Nancy. And the thing is that in mental health, those people are usually the victims and not the perpetrators. A very small percentage of the mentally ill people are perpetrators. You see that in the mass shootings. And we know that we won't stop every gun violence event. But most of the 187,000 are not by the mass murders that are committed by the seriously mentally ill. They're committed one-on-one. And those are the people that will have the, that will get the most benefit from the background checks bill.
One of the points that comes up when talking about this issue is people who are, have guns in their home or support ready access to obtaining a weapon say, well, you know, it's a safety issue, and they can point to people who have stopped a home invasion or protected their family because they had a weapon. Is there anything that you've encountered or any sort of discussions that make a difference, you know, that, yes, you can maybe prevent violence, but there is a role for home protection and personal protection. So how do you kind of weigh those two things as you personally sort through this in your own mind, and how do you come to your opinion? Nancy, would you like to talk about that?
Well, the statistics show that only a fraction of the use of a gun is used for home protection or personal protection as compared to the massive number of murders, of accidental shootings, of suicides from gun. So, I mean, sure, we have our Second Amendment right, and we have a right to protect ourselves. But that is a fraction of the number of times that any gun in a home, the likelihood that it's going to be used for something detrimental like a suicide or an accidental shooting or a murder is far greater than the incidents that it will be used for protection.
I do think that the suicide, especially, you know, like in that moment, having that handy, I think, has been well documented that the lethality of the completion of suicide is much more prevalent than if there hadn't been a weapon there. Pat, what do you think about?
Well, Sarah, I think that people should be able to protect their property and their homes and their children, and nobody is trying to take the guns away from people who should have them or who can have them. But we are trying to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people. I don't consider a mother protecting her children a dangerous person. I do worry that to protect her children, the gun would have to be fairly readily available, and then how do you keep it from becoming an accident waiting to happen? Because I think the statistics show that if a gun is available in a home that's not secured properly, that the percentages of accidental shootings and deaths by that gun are much higher than the protection of the people in the home from an invader.
Nancy, I'd like to ask about your personal experience. I mean, it has to be difficult to talk about that day, that morning, what you went through and, you know, the other survivors of other shootings. It has to be difficult to share that sort of pain and emotion. What is it like when you do that, and then the response isn't necessarily what you might be hoping for.
Well, it's heartbreaking. You know, to come out of the Safeway and kneel in blood and try to breathe life into somebody who's bleeding to death on the sidewalk and look over and see a precious little 7-year-old girl that you know is not going to make it. And it is just heartbreaking. And for me, I cannot reconcile that I was spared and a little 9-year-old girl was killed. So I go back to Washington and I try to reconcile it by saying, okay, I'm going to be the voice and I'm going to make some change. And when no change happens in over 2 years and I hear these arguments of, you're going to confiscate my gun, we're going to have a gun registry, it wouldn't have, everything you're doing would not have stopped the shooter at the Safeway. That is so beside the point. If we can do anything to save a life, we need to do it. We need to do it now, and there's no debate.
Thank you very much, Patricia Maish and Nancy Bowman, for joining us at the Buckmaster Show. I would like to say thank you to Bill Buckmaster for letting me fill in for him while he's on vacation. Have a good day.
Thanks, Sarah.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.